So does everybody have a sheet for this sheet? Yeah. Haribo. And does everybody have a pencil or a pen? Okay. All right, good. Okay. So now I thought to first begin by introducing the topic, but then I was thinking that perhaps I should begin by reintroducing myself, because Vijayanatha Priya Prabhu introduced so nicely, but there are a few things that I would like to clarify. Firstly, I would like to explain that the description he gave of my blooming career before becoming a devotee was a description that Srila Prabhupada also used to give, but it was, you could say at best, it was the potential, the possibility of what might have been, rather than actually what was taking shape. Because here we are in this world, we have careers, we have families, we have dreams and expectations, but as we pursue them, we discover that they're a lot more complicated than we intended them to be. We thought that I would just do this, it will take up this amount of time, and then I will do this, and then I will achieve this. And you start off, and all of a sudden you find that it's much more elaborate than that. So I was only in the very beginning stages of this elaboration. I was young. So it was a little bit easier and less developed. My potential career was a lot less developed than was described, which allowed me to perhaps to get out of that path. I was saying to one of the devotees here that there are two things that make many people throughout the years have given up their careers. There are two things that usually have to be there. One of them is that they feel themselves to be a seeking for something. And the other one is that they have met with some disappointment or some uncertainty in the value of the choice they've made to pursue this particular type of career. And so with some doubt on one side and some positive on the other side, or some questioning, some searching for something, when they come in touch with a path that offers them something they were actually subconsciously and consciously looking for, they recognize it. So I would say in my case that even as part of my persona in my career, I was already telling people in interviews or various forums that I was looking for the truth. We were young, it was the 1960s, there was the era of the hippies, where people were often easily saying, I'm looking for the truth. Not with very necessarily very clear idea what the truth was, but it was something that seemed to come from the heart. So then for me, when I went to visit Los Angeles, I'm from Melbourne actually, there I was away from my family, I was away from my career, I was away from everything, and I had only been there 1 week, and I had something that I had to give. Somebody had given me something to give to Prabhupada, and I had agreed to do it. So I had to go to the temple and drop it off, and then I would go on with my life as planned. But that was a little trick of Krishna. He's very clever. So when I went to the temple, I remember to this day very distinctly having the inner intuitive voice said to me, there's something here that is good for you. There's something here that you need. You're looking, saying you're looking, maybe you're not looking, but there's something here that you should try and find. And so I felt very confronted by that feeling, because it meant I had to now act. And it was much easier to talk about action than actually act. So I went into the temple feeling that, yes, there's something here. And after I had been there and chanted with the devotees and heard some philosophy, I took the giant leap and I asked them, because I was free from my usual obligations and relations, I said, can I just stay here for a visit? and they had to think about it, because in those days the temple wasn't open for coming and going. It was like a more monastic situation. So they said, all right, you can stay. So I moved in, and the thing that touched me most and the thing that made it impossible to leave was that when I heard from Bhagavad Gita, it all made sense. And it was really difficult because it all made sense to me. And other people, I would tell them, this is what I've read, and it didn't make any sense to them. They couldn't see what it was relevant to their lives. But to me, it made sense. So when I got married in such an unusual way also, which was actually accurate, marrying somebody who you've never met before, there was virtually nothing to talk about. It was extremely awkward, as you can just sort of imagine if you saw it in a movie. So it was so awkward that I didn't know what to do with my time with this person who I didn't know. So what I did do was I took a book, just a notebook, and I grabbed the Bhagavad Gita, and I started going through and reading it, and anything that struck me, I'd write it in my book. And pretty soon I had so many quotes in my book, because we had nothing to talk about. there was no conversation, there was no relationship. So therefore there was so much, it was a moment of kind of encapsulated freedom. So at that time I wrote down so many verses, and I memorized verses because we were just in that initial stage. And to this day, that was the only time in my whole life I ever memorized verses or actually went so deeply into the Bhagavad Gita. So sometimes when you do something very difficult, you take a leap of faith, Krishna reciprocates in becoming very real to you because you've made that step towards Him. He shows Himself to you. Not that you have some sort of a fantasy that you see Him, He kind of reveals Himself from behind the curtain or something. But intuitively, you feel that, yes, this is the right thing and I'm on the right path. So this is what we have to all come to this point, where we ask ourselves, what's my life about? I'm busy, I've got so many family responsibilities, I've got so many things going on, but what's going to be the end result of my life? When I came to Los Angeles from Australia, I had gone to Los Angeles to further my career. I had just arrived there with this gift for Srila Prabhupada that I had to drop off. I had only been there 1 week in Los Angeles. I was staying in with some friends in Hollywood, some newly made friends. And one evening, actually the evening before I went to the temple, I suddenly woke up in the evening just before going to sleep to this thought that, what am I doing? What am I doing? I have developed this career, and this career has actually taken me far, far away from the origins of my parents and how they raised me, because they were religious people. And they don't know it because they're fascinated with the glamour of what they think they're seeing. But all my values have changed. And now I've come to a threshold. And now, for me to be successful in this atmosphere, I'm going to have to take a giant step down. I'm going to have to make many, many compromises to become successful now. And is it worth it? And I remember thinking to myself, okay, what will you gain? Do you want money? And I had seen people who had money. Do you want fame? And I thought of movie stars who had committed suicide because they were so famous and so deeply unhappy. Do you want a reputation? Do you want people running after you? Do you want this? Do you want that? What do you want that's going to be worth what you're going to do? And it was a very difficult moment for me because I couldn't think of anything that I really, what was going to be worth the choices I was going to have to make and the compromises that would follow. So I think many people have come here from India and they have become enamored by the materialism of the West. They think to themselves, oh, How will I fit in unless I do this, unless I do that? And my friends are doing this and that, and they seem to be getting a good job. And they become feverish, like worried. But they should also ask themselves these questions. And they should have a look at the consequential life of a person who has everything that money can buy. And if you look at them, you take their pulse, so to speak. And I had the opportunity to do that many times. And I didn't find a person that I really could admire. Very seldom. Especially nowadays in the corporate world, you'll be really struggling to find a person of character who's not selling themselves and selling their character and selling their intelligence and selling everything about themselves just to make some money and to take a pleasurable journey through life. So this was the thing that really struck me. And today when I was asked to come and speak tonight, I was thinking, what message could I prepare that would be valuable and valid for a group of people who are just trying to sort of take baby steps, you could say. Or perhaps it is their culture, but they have some ideas in their minds that makes them not really welcome going back towards their own culture. Or perhaps their understanding of their own culture is very imperfect, or it hasn't even been explored very well. And so there they are, and they're also, as they're hearing, they're being asked to move forward, to move forward. As I'm speaking, I'm asked also to move forward towards the truth. And if we don't do that, then we just have a very conventional social gathering that's also very nice, but it won't help you to advance unless you understand I'm being asked to move forward. And if you feel uncomfortable, then that's very good, because that means that Krishna is trying to get you to come further than you would like. There's a struggle, like a fever, is a struggle going on in the body, and it's causing some turbulence. But if you proceed, you will get a huge benefit from doing so, and I can personally say that. So I chose as my topic, understanding the greatness of God. And so the first verse we're looking at is in Bhagavad Gita chapter 10, verse 15. And the second part, the second lecture, is about removing the obstacles that get in the way. So, of course, all of Bhagavad Gita is on this subject. So to find one verse and center on that, you'll obviously be drawing on so much information from other verses as well. But this particular verse, chapter 10, verse 15, I particularly have liked it for a very long time because I like the purport to this verse. So, as is the fashion nowadays, you always tell people, I'm passionate about teaching you all about computer work, so please hire me. So here we have to say, I'm very passionate about this particular verse because it gives us a very clear concept of what is God or the Supreme Personality. Now, we will later have a little look at one section of Srila Prabhupada, an excerpt of Srila Prabhupada speaking, where he will criticize the fact that if you read and study Bhagavad Gita, but you concoct your own idea of what it means, you interpret it in your own way, not now, after. Yeah. If you interpret it in your own way, you will come to the wrong result. And what is that called? Srila Prabhupada had a word he used regularly when he was talking. He used it very, very commonly. And if you listen to him or you read his books, you'll see this word over and over again. It's called a misconception. A misconception means my concept isn't correct. For example, if I think that people who wear glasses are all intelligent, there's lots of people wear glasses who aren't intelligent. But my concept is that people who wear glasses are intelligent. Then I will honor people who wear glasses, and if there's a very intelligent person who doesn't wear glasses, I will dismiss them. I won't even look at them, because my concept has a very large amount to do with how I select things that are important to me or things that aren't important to me. So if we have the correct conception of what is God, who is this supreme person? And even we can argue, of course, being in the beginning stages sometimes or having been brought up with misconceptions. Well, how do I know there is a God? So that I'll leave to my husband. He's very good at that explanation. I'm going to take it that you're willing to hear that there is a supreme authority and a supreme person. And if by chance that's a little difficult for you, then you should understand that you're being asked to move forward. And please do so. So this particular verse, chapter 10, verse 15. Svayam evatmanatmanam vetatvam purushottama bhuta bhavana bhutesha deva deva jagatpate. Now I would love to sing this a lot of times, but our time is short. So let us continue with the word for word. Svayam, personally. Eva, certainly. Atmana, by yourself. Atmanam, yourself. Veta, no. Tvam, you. Purush Uttam, the greatest of all persons. Bhuta Bhavana, O origin of everything. Bhutesha, O Lord of everything. Deva Deva, O Lord of all the demigods. Jagat Pate, O Lord of the entire universe. And here is the translation, Srila Prabhupada's translation. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own internal potency. O Supreme Person, origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of gods, Lord of the universe. Please repeat. Indeed, you alone know yourself by your own internal potency. O Supreme Person, origin of all, Lord of all beings, God of gods, Lord of the universe. So now, I have, and you can read on your list if we go to the next page, given a little bit of a summary or made a little simplification of the points in the purport of this particular verse that I wanted to share with you. The supreme truth. So we have different terms that we use. The word God, for example, is a little tricky. Because God, it's a Western term. And people have shrouded the word God in all kinds of meanings. And in India, they would use perhaps the word Ishwar, controller. It also, that's a Western definition of what Ishwara means. So the truth, the supreme everything, the supreme master controller, the supreme Godhead. Prabhupada liked to use the word Godhead because he explained that practically speaking we're all Ishwaras. We all have our little realm of control. We all have some God power. But there's a supreme Godhead. He's the head God. And below him there's so many other Ishwaras. There are the demigods, the devas, and so forth. And in the verse prior to this verse, Arjuna was saying to Krishna in the same mood as this verse, he's saying, even the demigods don't know you, the asuras can't know you, no one can know you. I accept everything that you tell me, because Krishna has just told him of his greatness. So here Prabhupada points out that there are three ways that we can understand. I use the word God, but as I said, God isn't really complete and full and large enough. So Prabhupada uses the word absolute, because absolute includes absolutely everything. The absolute truth, or the supreme truth, the highest knowledge is that the supreme person, he is manifest or realizable, either as the first one, as impersonal Brahman. Many people, they say, I see that God is in everything. That's true. He is. So if you think like that, I see that God is in everything. God is everywhere. God is this. God is all God. That's correct. He says yes. Krishna says yes. That is also true. He says, but continue. There's three different aspects. The second one is that he is within the heart as a personal guide. He's a personal guide. Like you have, you know, you pay so much money to get a personal coach, right? And they tell you what exercises to do to get very strong and healthy, or what you should do about this and that. They're a personal trainer. But he's the original personal trainer. And therefore, when we take our step forward towards him, he's going to reciprocate from within. Well, many religions of the world accept this idea that God guides us from within. But what we also understand from Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna says it, is that at last, or originally, he is also the supreme personality of Godhead. He's the supreme person away from this world that's so real to us. And that's everything to us, and everything we believe and know and like is here. But he's aloof from all this. And simultaneously, he is everything. And simultaneously, he's within your heart. So now we're starting to understand just a little bit of what is the nature of this supreme person. It's inconceivable. We can't conceive of this. Our brain can't commute it. And so therefore, sometimes we think, oh, I can't understand this. It's not important. Put it aside. But actually, we should not put it aside, but we should enter into Krishna's own explanation of himself and thereby get to know him. Now, let me read here. At the last stage of understanding the absolute truth, one comes to the supreme personality of Godhead. Now, here's the part that I love about this purport, that I'm passionate about this purport for. These verses, these words that you have just read together, Veta Tvam Purushottamam Bhuta Bhavana Bhutesha Deva Deva Jagatpate. Following the commentaries of the previous teachers in our particular line, Srila Prabhupada has read the various commentaries that have been made in the past, and then he has taken them, and from them he has taken what inspired him to present to the ongoing world. And so it is not as if Prabhupada is speaking something that just happened to come to him, he got struck by it, and now he started his own movement. It's not like that at all. It's completely opposite to that. Srila Prabhupada is representing a chain of realized knowledge. And therefore, he asks us also to keep the message intact and not change it to suit our own level of understanding, but to pass it on, because the power is within what has come down. Just like he gives an example, if there's a mango. One time we were in Bangladesh, and we were in the district of Rajshahi, and it was just before the ripened mangoes. And every house had mango trees and mango trees, and right up high at the very top, the mangoes would hang by their very thin stem. All up and down the tree, it looked like a Christmas tree. There were so many mangoes. So if you want to get the fresh mango from the very top of the tree, you don't get some illiterate person to climb up the top of the tree and throw it down. Because you might not catch it, it might land on the ground and then it will be ruined. But the process is to hand it down. And you hand it down, 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 and finally it comes intact to the ground. From the top of the tree it comes. So Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, I am speaking. Krishna is saying, I am speaking. Listen to me. I am speaking to you. This knowledge will bring you so much benefit. So if Krishna is speaking and the teachers retain the integrity of that message and they pass it down very carefully to us, it has a power. And therefore I can say that that power touched me so much so that I did something that otherwise I would never, ever, ever have been able to imagine doing. Why would I become a Hindu? I had no interest. Why would I take up a, change my dress, change my food, change everything? Why would we do that? For you, it is your culture. For us, it is not our culture. Why would we take such a risk about the economic development of our family? Why would we marry somebody we hadn't even done any astrology or found out the gotra or done anything? Why would we take these very risky choices? Only because of the power of that message that came down purely from above by Srila Prabhupada's blessings, and he handed it to us. He never asked me, by the way. He says, I asked her to get married. He never asked me. He actually consented to the arrangement. Somebody else made the arrangement. But the choice was all mine. The choice was all mine. Why would I make such a choice if there wasn't something very powerful involved? So please hear. A common man, or even a liberated man, who has realized this impersonal Brahman, that God is everywhere, or even he may have realized that God is somehow as an inner guide, right? Sometimes we feel like that, but he may not understand that God is a personality. He may not have comprehended that. And therefore, Arjuna says, you are the Purushottam, the Uttam, Purush. You are a Purush. You are a person. You are not a non-person. You are everywhere. So the impersonalist, the person who's interested in this impersonal understanding, they say, well, God is everywhere. So why do you go to the temple? And we say, yes, he is everywhere, but he is also a person. If you limit him, then you'll understand him incorrectly. And Prabhupada did not limit God. Such people, therefore, may endeavor to understand the Supreme Person from the verses of Bhagavad Gita, which are being spoken by this person, Krishna. Okay, so now Srila Prabhupada will go through these words, these names. Sometimes the impersonalists accept Krishna as Bhagavan, or they accept his authority. So try to think for yourselves, how have I grown up? What has been my understanding, my religious kind of a view? Where do I fit in here? Is there something here that's how I always thought. So someone may think, yes, he's Bhagavan, but they don't accept his authority. Yet many liberated persons cannot understand Krishna as Purushottam, or the Supreme Person, is the first name. Therefore, Arjuna addresses him as Purushottam. Now, he's the Supreme Person, right? Yet, even though he's the Supreme Person, one may not understand that he's the Supreme Person, but he's also our Father. So that's a further understanding of who he is. He's a Supreme Person. He could be up there just being a person by himself. But he's our Father. This is relevant. So therefore, Arjuna addresses him as Bhuta Bhavana, as the Father of all living entities. Now, one can be a father. Maybe in your experience you see fathers, and sometimes a father, especially nowadays, is not very responsible. Sometimes fathers divorce their family and leave their families in difficulty. Sometimes fathers have bad habits and they take all the money and so many things. And perhaps you've seen this on television or seen a friend like that or something like that. So it's nice that he's my father, but so. And if one comes to know him as the father of all living entities, still one may not know that he is the supreme controller. Not only is he my father, but he is in control. He's controlling. Therefore, he is addressed as Bhutesha, or the supreme controller of everyone. So, okay, he's the father, he's a person, he's father, he's a controller. And even if one knows Krishna as the supreme controller of all living entities, still one may not know that he is the origin of all the demigods. So many people from India, we didn't know what a demigod was. But so many people from India have upon their altar, everybody. There's something to gain from having everybody. And I remember the first time I went in Hong Kong when we were living there to one Indian family's house, and they had an altar and they had so many people on the altar from here and there and everywhere. And they also had one little plastic red Indian. And we said, "What's that?" And they said, "Oh, he's all right." And they kept it there with everybody else, all the gods. So there's no discernment. This is called misconception. I don't understand who God is. How can I surrender to such a person? How can I move forward if I don't understand who he is? What is my connection to him? So therefore, even you know he's the supreme controller, you may not know that he is the origin of all the demigods, and therefore he is addressed herein as Deva Deva, the worshipful god of all the demigods. And number 5, even if one knows him as the worshipful god of all the demigods, one may not know that he is also the supreme owner of everything, the supreme proprietor of everything. Now stop for a minute and think about that. If he's the supreme proprietor of everything, that means he's the supreme proprietor of me and of everything. Everything means everything. When people say we can all become one with God, but they're not thoughtful. And so when they say we can all become one with God, they're saying, I can become one with all of that. But there's two. There's me and that. If I become one with that, I don't exist anymore. I don't have any perception anymore because I've become that. So I have no pleasure can come from being that. The pleasure comes from the perception of relating to something. So here, in our understanding of who is this personality, who we are aspiring to understand, we should understand this also, Arjuna says. He says, he therefore addresses him as Jagat Pati. And Prabhupada says, and I have underlined, thus the truth about Krishna is established in this verse by the realization of Arjuna. And we should follow in the footsteps of Arjuna to understand Krishna as he is. If you want to understand, and please note in the verse it explains on the first page that only you can know yourself because you are all of these things. How can we know you? Just as I was noticing with the quote about Einstein, he was feeling humbled. The more he learnt about things, he was realizing that my finite brain cannot understand all of these things. I cannot understand the origin of everything. Who do I think I am? I have the same size machinery up here as everybody else. And I'm going to understand the origin of all of you? And you're only a small handful of people in a room. How about all the other people all over India? And all the other people in Australia, 20 million of them, I'm going to understand the origin of all of them. I'm going to understand the origin of everything we see, the natural beauty we see around us. I am so proud and so intelligent that I'm going to understand this. It's not possible. So this is what we have to understand. It's not possible. What we can understand is what we receive that is coming in this unbroken way. That we have access to understand. And that is why Srila Prabhupada was so adamant, don't change anything. You can't understand it, that's okay. I understand that you can't understand it, but don't change it. So if we're not very well trained and very, very careful, we do change it. We think, oh, I don't think I'm sure about that. I don't really believe that. Maybe it's not quite like that. Maybe it's really like this. And I think this. And so-and-so said, and I put a little bit of this together, and I make up my own story of what is the truth. And then what happens is it becomes spoiled. Now, I want to give you about 10 minutes, and I want you to go to your second page, page 3, and I want you to write down, as it explains at the bottom of page 2, write in your own words the meaning of each name that Arjuna has called Krishna. So the names are there. Write what you have understood there, please. And then, part B is, explain in your own understanding why each name indicates a greater understanding of Krishna's position than the previous one. So, if worst to worst, I say worst to worst, you can copy what's already written. And best to best, you try to process it a little bit and come to some level of understanding. So now it is just before 8. I will give you 10 minutes and then I will use the kartals to make a sound. And then we'll go on to the next section. So please start. Does anyone need a pen? Ten minutes are up. Okay, so if you're in the middle of something, please continue for a couple more seconds until you complete it. But we'll continue our class. So now I have a question for you. Why is it difficult to understand Krishna? Not, this is a question, I'm not asking you why is it difficult for you to understand Krishna, because then you'll tell me about yourself. I'm asking you why is it difficult to understand Krishna, so you can tell me something about Krishna. What's that? He's inconceivable. Can you give an example of his inconceivability? He divides himself in Paramatma form into so many, and still he's absolute. What else? What else? Everything rests in him like pearls. Say again. He's aloof. It's difficult to understand him because he's aloof. It's difficult to understand how somebody, everything can rest in somebody. Because he has to be somebody, so he's not part of what's resting in him, right? If I'm carrying all these things, I'm carrying all the things. But he's saying everything rests in me. That's inconceivable. Because he's part of the everything and he rests in himself. Any other? Thank you. Any other points that make it difficult for us to understand Krishna? He's not so cheap. Well, one I find, because you see, in where we live in Perth, we are making a gallery. We've been working on this project for many years. It's called the Sacred India Gallery. And we're hoping to introduce to the public to the sacred nature of three places in India, Sri Navadvip, Mayapur Dham, Jagannath Puri Dham, and Vrindavan. So in order to get some material to put on the panels on the wall to explain things, I've had to go many times to the wiki. Right? Everyone must be familiar with wiki, the public encyclopedia, where all information is stored that everybody takes as being absolutely true. And when you go there, you find they have terrible trouble understanding Krishna. Because they're dealing with the rational mind, and the rational mind is superior to all every other faculty. So here's the rational mind, and you tell the rational mind that Krishna, he takes birth. He has a mother and a father. Just think about that for a minute. A God has a mother and a father? God has a mother and a father. Aren't mothers and fathers older than you? So how can he have a mother and a father? Or we see, if we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Mother Yasoda punishes him because he tells lies. How could God tell lies? You know, even Lord Brahma, who's sometimes he's called Deva Deva Jagatpate. When the demigods want him to intervene when there's some catastrophe happening, like when Hiranyakashipu was standing up with his hands upright and he was determined to gain power, the demigods came to Lord Brahma because he was praying to Lord Brahma, and they said to Lord Brahma, he's trying to get your post. Do something immediately and stop him, because they didn't want to lose their post. And when they came to appeal to him, they called Lord Brahma Deva Deva Jagatpate. The same name that's here. They called Lord Brahma that. But Lord Brahma, who's been given the same respect, he couldn't understand Krishna. He couldn't understand that this little boy is walking in Vrindavan, he's holding a laddu in his left hand. In his left hand. He doesn't even hold it in his right hand. And he's just walking around bare feet, just playing with other boys, making jokes, laughing, playing with the cows, holding the laddu in his left hand. And Lord Brahma said, this is the supreme controller, the Bhuteshwa Bhuteshu. This is him. He couldn't picture it. God has to be mighty. Right, in the Christian concept, and he has a long beard because he's old. And he has to have a long beard. And he's very powerful. And if you do something wrong, he might strike you with a thunderbolt. So you have to be very careful with him. This is in other religions, they have these concepts. And here we are, and we're exploring the understanding of Krishna. And so therefore you'll see, wherever you look, almost anywhere you look in any Indian website about spirituality, they will use the word mythological. This is a mythological story. How can this be God? He can't be like this. And they'll be embarrassed as well. It's an old story from our Rig Veda. Don't worry. We don't believe these things. We are modern. So, that's one point I wanted to raise. Why it is difficult to understand Krishna. And the other question I want to ask you to consider, and please some answers, is what would we gain if we actually connected intimately with a person who has the qualities that you just wrote down? What would we gain? What would we gain? In the Bible it says you can give up you can sell your soul, you gain nothing. Make your treasures in heaven. So what would I gain if I became wealthy and famous and gained success and so forth and didn't become a devotee? So what will you gain if you deeply establish your relationship with this quality of personality? What will you gain? Yes? What was that? Somebody said something? Infinite pleasure. Now the infinite is beyond our comprehension, yes? Infinite we can't understand. But if you think like more pleasure and more pleasure and more pleasure. If we could think of an analogy that would help us to understand, it's like, has anyone ever seen a picture of the Niagara Falls? Yes? Hands up those who've seen a picture or visited the Niagara Falls. You see there's an almost unlimited force of water coming over the edge of the falls and going down to the ocean. So imagine if we had pleasure coming in that force. Imagine if all day we were thinking about this instead of thinking about other things that are limited and worrying. About this person. He's my father. He's my father. And he's such a controlling, he has so much power. And if I was to get to know him, to try to become in relationship with him again, I would gain so much. So please think on these things, because they're very important questions for each of you. Because each of you have to take your own steps. It's up to you to take your own steps, but if you want to be satisfied and happy and gain something of unlimited value, you have to take your own steps. Now, I'd like to share with you just briefly some comments by another teacher in our line, one of these other acharyas, who Srila Prabhupada got read his commentary and placed some of these purports, some of these points in his own purport. Now, please keep your pens in hand and with your translations, you're writing the meaning of these words. I'm going to read you something. Listen and see if there are any other words that might come here that you could add to your definition of those terms. Therefore, Krishna is being, Arjuna is saying, you are the best of persons, superior even to the creator of the Mahatattva, Lord Mahavishnu. You are not only the best, but you are Bhuta Bhavana, the controller of everyone, right up to the great grand sire Brahma. You are not only the controller, but you are also the deva amongst the devas. As you sport with the devas, such as Brahma and Shiva, who are like your pastime instruments. And furthermore, you are Jagat Pate, or the master of the universe. Out of your unlimited compassion, you are the master of all jivas like me, who are living in this material world. Now, here's another explanation of these words. For example, Bhuta Bhavana means you are the father of all living entities. Sometimes someone may be a father, but he does not control his offspring. But, O Bhutesha, you are the controller of all living entities. Someone may be the controller of all living entities, but he may not be worshipable. But you, O Deva Deva, are worshipable even for the devas. And someone may possess all these qualities, worshipable, father, controller, but he may fail to maintain all the other living entities. But you, O Jagat Pate, you alone maintain the universe. Only you know the glory of your Achintya Tattva. Nobody, including the devas, the danavas, or the humans, can know even a particle of your glories by their independent endeavors. Only your pure bhaktas can know something by your mercy. For this reason, I beg you to please be merciful to me. Only you, by your own chit shakti, know about your own personality and the tattva of your birth. Devas and humans can never understand by their own intelligence how your eternal form, which exists even before creation, becomes manifest in this inert world while at the same time remaining completely independent from the laws of this world. Krishna remains completely independent from the laws of this world. This is the position of the Supreme Lord. And we who are bound by the laws of this world, unless we hear from somebody who is also free, a free citizen, we cannot understand what it would be like to be free. We can't comprehend it. And therefore, even great scholars, they say when they're speaking about Bhagavan or Krishna, they say, when he comes to this material world, he takes a body in the sattva gun. There is a philosophy like this. But Srila Prabhupada says, no, this is not correct. Now, what I would like to do to finish is, now this is a little difficult because I didn't have time to copy these notes out. I would like to have them put on the screen and we can read them together. These are a couple of comments because one of my, as I said, when I first got married, I spent hours and hours playing around reading verses from the Bhagavad Gita. It became a bit of an addiction. People get habits. So when the folio or the Veda base came out, which you can put on your computer and you can find out so many things that Srila Prabhupada has written all stored in one program. So I used to like to go in there and put in a word and search for it and find out what would come back, and that was very interesting. So I was looking up this word Deva Deva. And I found two places where Srila Prabhupada was speaking and he used this word, Deva Deva. So this is one. Now this is Dr. Patel, was a friend of Srila Prabhupada's in Mumbai. And Dr. Patel used to come and visit Srila Prabhupada and they would discuss Krishna Katha. Dr. Patel had a lingering affection for impersonal theology. But he was very knowledgeable in Bhagavad Gita. So sometimes they would discuss in a very affectionate way and they would agree on points. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada would become very, very animated and very, very loud when he would discuss. They would both raise their voices and they would go like this if Srila Prabhupada found that Dr. Patel's understanding was deviating from the spirit of Bhagavad Gita, he would be very firm with him. And sometimes they would get angry with each other and he wouldn't come for a few days. But then again he would come. And their relationship was very special. So here they are in agreement. So this conversation has been going on and Dr. Patel has come to this verse and he has just quoted the verse right before, this particular verse 10:15. So Prabhupada says, ah, you are the supreme of all of them. This is the meaning of Deva Deva. You are worshipped by the Devas. Prabhupada. Now this is to be understood, how you are all pervading by your influence in your power. That means you are always there. Krishna is always there. He's always there for us. He's always there to be known. You, person, is there. Just like a big man, big businessman, is sitting in his room, but he is all pervading. His influence is everywhere. Dr. Patel, but he must have got special powers deputed to certain people. And these are that vibhuti. Prabhupada, yes, that is vibhuti. That does not mean this Mayavad or this impersonal philosophy is because he has spread everywhere, therefore he is not a person. Prabhupada said, this is, does not mean that. Because Krishna says, it's a Vibhuti Yoga, the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, I am the light and the sun and the moon. Of this I am that. I am the spring season. I am so many things, he says. Because Arjuna is asked, show me your Vibhuti. Show me your opulence. And Krishna says, yes. And at the end of saying all these things, he says, but what is the use of this? Let me tell you one thing. By a single fragment of myself, I pervade everything. So I'm giving you all these, I'm this, I am that. Why is he saying that? So when we see the sun, we can think, oh, this is one of Krishna's vibhutis. We don't see the sun, we see Krishna if we see like that. Have you ever had the experience that your children's shoes, if you have children, or a similar analogy if you don't, are outside the door somewhere or someone you know, and you say, oh, look, there's... And you recognize the shoes of the child, the shoes of the person. But the shoes are just shoes and no one else is interested. Recently this happened to me in Perth. We had one lady staying with us. She had a 7-year-old daughter. We came to the temple. We all had all our shoes everywhere, taking off our shoes. And she goes, look, there's my daughter's shoes. Because her daughter had come separately. And then now I understand. This is how we should learn to look at the world. This is Krishna's world. And I am Krishna's. So Prabhupada is explaining, yes, he is spread everywhere, but he remains a person without any change of yaya, but still he is spread. So he's not a person like you or I who's limited, but he's not also everywhere and therefore he's not a person. That he is asking that, how shall I understand you, that you are spread everywhere? Please continue down. So then Prabhupada says, so we have to understand from Krishna how he is all pervading, not that mental speculation. Just like if you take a thing and distribute it all over, the original thing is lost. Not like that. The original Krishna is still there. Original Krishna is there. Is that the end of that one? Okay. So here's one point Srila Prabhupada is making. He's everywhere, but he's also there. He's original Krishna. And he is there for us. So please let us see the other quote there, Prabhu. Now here this is Srila Prabhupada preaching. So Harisori Prabhu, who you may have met, has just quoted the verse. And then he says, if we accept sarvam etadvritam as it is, then we are benefited. That means I am everywhere. And if we do not accept in that way, then it will be nashta. Sa kalenaha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. Then it is being spoiled. And what benefit will you get with spoiled thing? As soon as you interpret, it is spoiled. Immediately spoiled. Continue, please. So what benefit will be derived from the spoiled thing? And that is being done. Don't believe in Krishna. Don't believe in the words of Krishna. And if I am preaching Bhagavad Gita, what is the benefit? In other words, if I don't believe in Krishna, I don't believe in the words of Krishna, even if I'm preaching Bhagavad Gita, what is the benefit? What is the benefit? It is spoiled. So if you distribute some spoiled food, it will increase food poison. And that is going on. Instead of taking benefit from first-class food, if you distribute a spoiled, then there will be food poisoning that is being done. In India, every home knows Bhagavad Gita. And because it is spoiled now, there will become food poisoning. They are denying the existence of God. God is speaking, Bhagavan Uvacha, And they are now, they are not believing in the existence of God. God? Where is God? Science. This is going on. If we speak of God, then we are primitive and up to date. Up to date means I am God, you are God. This is up to date. And if we say now Krishna is God, you worship him, you become a devotee, this is primitive. And these Americans, although they are up to date, they have accepted it, my word. I presented to them that Krishna is God and they have accepted. This is their qualification. So this last little part I wanted to share with you because, practically speaking, we ourselves are an example of Srila Prabhupada's magic. So one devotee, one guest is speaking to Prabhupada and he says, yes, I have told them that Krishna is the Supreme Lord and they have accepted. This is my magic and this is their magic. That's all. You ask them if I did any magic with them. And then the guest is saying, this is magic in itself. And Prabhupada laughs and he says, yes, it is magic. It is magic, undoubtedly. But I never created any gold or some other trick. Because someone can say, look, you see, I can do this thing or that thing. Now respect me as God. I am God. He said, I did not do that. And neither I do know it. How to do it. Although there is no scarcity of gold in my pocket, I started this business with 40 rupees. Continue? That's it? Okay. That's it? That's the end of that quote? It's a little bit more. Ah, that's it. I edited it. Okay. So there Srila Prabhupada is explaining. What is the magic? The magic is the authenticity of his message. The potency is coming from here, down through. Just like if you have a pipe and it's going like this and water is flowing through, if somebody is fortunate enough to find a tap and they turn on the tap, then the water will flow into their cup. And when they have the water, then their thirst is quenched. So this is where I will stop for today. And we'll go on tomorrow. And while we share with you further on this subject from Bhagavad Gita, asking the question, why then don't we do it? What's the problem? Why is it so difficult for us? We'll talk about ourselves rather than talking about Krishna. All right, thank you.